Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you very much for joining us. Our guests are Richard Maurer of the Anchorage Daily News, Tim Bradner of the Alaska Journal of Commerce, and Dermot Cole of the Alaska Dispatch. Richard, subsistence, not the way of life, but the court case is back on the front page. The Parnell administration is appealing a subsistence ruling to the U.S. Supreme Court, and the reaction from the Alaska Native community has been intense. Tell us about it.
Well, this is one of the, I think Governor Tony Knowles may have said it best, this was a zombie issue that rose from the grave. The whole subsistence thing was so intense in the 1990s, early 2000s, and then it just sort of faded away, and I had no idea this thing was coming back again. Apparently, there was a U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals decision came out that affirmed what the federal government had been doing, which is saying that all the rivers that are inside a federal protected area, such as a refuge or national park, and all the waters adjacent to it, are subject to their regulations on subsistence for natives. The state said, or for anyone in rural areas, the state says, no, we own the navigable waters. That was given to us in statehood. Every state owns their navigable waters. You have no business doing this. And so it sets up kind of a classic fight over who manages what. But like you say, this is a really big issue in the rural part of the state because it's the federal law that guarantees first shot at limited resources to people in rural areas.
And part of the discussion here is that Alaska Native organizations and many Alaska Natives feel the state government has been either unsympathetic to them or outright hostile to them on this and other issues.
I think that's probably a fair characterization. They certainly believe that, and there's probably some truth to that. I think that the state constitution, this is a federal versus state issue.
Yeah, right.
The state constitution says you can't have a preference for one group of people over another. The federal law says you can. It mandates it. So that's kind of the classic fight.
Tim, help us with the politics. This doesn't seem at all beneficial to the Parnell administration the year before the general election.
It sure does, Michael, and it's hard for me to really understand. The timing is terrible. I mean, why, you know, he may have felt he had to appeal this issue over navigable waters, which is another zombie issue. I mean, we haven't heard of that in years, and that's an arcane issue that nobody, very few people are ever going to understand anyway. But why now? And it really seems it's really going to stir up and inflame the old rural-urban divide that we heard so much about in the 1990s, which really has been kind of laid to rest. And this is just going to stir it all up again. It's going to hand a big Alaska rural vote to Byron Mallott, who's running for governor. And I don't understand why Parnell felt he had to do it now.
Okay, you wanted to add something here quickly?
I mean, it could be that the governor just thinks this is a big, you know, big important issue for the state.
It's the right thing to do from his perspective.
It could be. It could also be he is making a political calculus that you got Byron Mallott, probably most likely the Democratic candidate, a native, very likable person. He's going to get, you know, 90% of the native vote anyway, I would guess. I don't know, who knows, but he's going to get a large portion of it. Maybe the governor's thinking, well, let's drive a wedge between the natives and the non-natives here, and maybe this is something
you
can do.
I don't see how it can help Dan Sullivan at all.
That would be the other question. Yeah. What does it do to the rest of the ballot? But we need to move on. Tim, Shell, that international oil giant, has had all kinds of problems getting its offshore program working here in Alaska. Now we are told, shale by headlines, shale to scale back.
Well, what they're planning, Michael, is to focus really on the Chukchi Sea, which is they feel is more prolific and potential for larger discoveries than the Beaufort Sea, the other area that they were exploring. Whether it happens, they're not committing to anything in 2014, but they want to start the permitting right now, which they've applied to the U.S. Department of the Interior for an exploration plan. We don't know what's in that plan, and we won't for a few days, but we presume that they've been quite public that they plan to focus on the Chukchi Sea. And not to bring the Kulik back, that's the drill ship that was damaged in the storm, but to...
Can they bring it back? I thought physically it was just a
non-performer. No, they will not bring it back. They'll bring another vessel back to be the standby, but they'll bring the Noble Discoverer, the drill ship they had, back, and they would plan to drill in the Chukchi. Now, one of the implications of this, which has sort of disturbs me, is that the Chukchi, if they find oil in the Chukchi, that's decades away from developing, being brought into the pipeline. The Beaufort Sea, on the other hand, is something that's near shore, and they could get into the pipeline fairly quickly if they found oil. So I'm thinking in terms of the decline of oil through our pipeline and keeping the pipeline.
What are some of the specifics of the difficulty of getting Chukchi oil online?
It's 60 miles offshore, and if they make they're fairly confident there'll be discoveries out there, but you have to build a pipeline out there, and then you have to build a pipeline across the National Petroleum Reserve. So it's a 400-mile or several hundred miles new pipelines. It'd be a huge construction project, you know, long-term permitting hassles, a lot of environmental issues.
And I'm sure they'd be very sensitive to oil prices.
Yeah, and whereas the Beaufort Sea is near shore, there's a pipeline existing that goes out that way anyway. They could hook that up and have it flowing pretty quickly. I'm sure Shell's thought about these things, but in terms of our state of Alaska interest, getting more oil quickly is something that is of interest to all of us, I think.
Okay, we hope to have Dermot Cole with us. Dermot, are you there, or by voice, or are we going to go back to our other guests?
No, I think, at least I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you. We're going to have to suffer through some, there's your pictures, just come up on the screen. Okay, Dermot, Shell is not the only one struggling. The state of Alaska is facing a budget deficit. There's just not enough tax revenue. Savings will have to be used to keep us in balance. Explain. Aha. Dermot went off. You with us there, Dermot? Okay, that doesn't...
I can speak.
Okay, why don't you speak to it, Tim?
Well, there's double whammy here, really. And yeah, I am, but...
Go ahead, if you can pick it up, Dermot.
Okay. Well, I know we have a bad connection here, but it's both declining oil prices and declining production. Oil prices are now close to $100 a barrel, which would have seemed an enormous amount just a few years ago. But now that's far below what the state needs to balance its budget. And with production continuing to the state is spending a great deal more money than it's taking in. We have a lot of savings built up over the past few years, but that can only last so long. And there has to be a plan as to what's going to happen when the savings runs out.
Now, at $105 a barrel, which I think is what we have right now, how much would it take from the budget reserve to balance the budget?
Well, you have two moving items here. The what's going to be the average oil price for the year and what ends up being is lower than expected this fiscal year, and oil prices are lower than expected this fiscal year. So the cash deficit could be well over $1 billion. If oil prices drop substantially, it's just going to get bigger and bigger. Today's oil price, as we speak, is about $100. It's been going down for several weeks.
Okay, and of course we don't know which direction it's going from here. Tim, you wanted to add something?
Oh, I was going to just add that the Department of Revenue will make its official revenue forecast in early December, and that'll be an update as to what the deficit and what the production figures look like. But just adding to what Dermot said, it seems like the department always kind of overshoots its production estimates. The decline is always more, production decline is always more.
Well, if you looked at the last 3 years or four years, that would be true? Is that what you're telling
us? Yeah, and I think even before that. But it's, the department does as best it can, but it's just, I think the fields are declining faster than people think.
Okay. Richard, reapportionment. The reapportionment of the legislature remains incomplete. We are still waiting for Fairbanks Judge Michael McConaughey to rule on a variety of motions before the board, before the court, from the board and from the critics of the board, the Democratic Party, and several other plaintiffs. Tell us what you know.
Well, there's a huge new wrinkle or something like that that's been tossed into. It's a sad situation. The board's chief attorney, who is a critical part of their thinking and the way they operate, Michael White, has cancer, and that's really that's a personal tragedy. But it's also slowed the entire process down. At one point, the board there's supposed to be what. It's not quite a trial because it's not, you know, it's not the kind of case that you have. But it was going to be a 4 or 5 day hearing in Fairbanks.
There's no jury. It's all before
it's
the
all
judge.
It's all before the judge. And it was going to be in November. They put it, they asked to have it delayed to December. And then the board came back and said, well, our attorney's sick. Can we put it back to, you know, further than that? And then they rescinded that. But this is one of, this is, you know, the 2012 election was held on a temporary districts. You'd hate to see the 2014 election being held under districts that have not gone through the entire court process, but there is a risk of that happening. And you know, at some point, people need to know if they're running, which district they're in, who they're running against, and whether there are as there is under the current plan, if the judge changes it, you know, what incumbent legislators are in finding themselves in the same district. So far, there are two.
And we could get the Supreme Court in here, as I understand it, because both sides have asked for summary judgment before Judge McConaughey, and that the Supreme Court would take those appeals.
Could get a Supreme Court. Surely will get the Supreme Court. Because and the people who are fighting this thing have raised multiple. It started out couple districts in Fairbanks, Southeast. And now it's virtually the entire state, but Anchorage is at is in controversy.
That's a good way to put it. Okay, Tim, this week the Alaska Miners Association were in Anchorage for their annual meeting and taking up the issues that are most important to them. What was on their agenda this year?
Well, Michael, the miners' meeting in Anchorage is really an event. I mean, it seems like every year it gets bigger. Hundreds of people jam into the Sheraton Hotel. You walk in that place, and every spare nook and cranny of their lobbies and everything is filled with this machinery and trade show and exhibits and people selling stuff and people making deals. And it's really something to see and experience. The presentations are usually a lot of, frankly, a lot of it is geology speak. But occasionally people will talk English in terms of the issues and things like that they're facing. The usual land issues. Interesting thing I observed is that the Pebble people made the statement. Mike Heatwald, representing the Pebble Partnership, sent the message that they don't want to go away. They feel they still have a project. Even though their major investor, Anglo American, has pulled out, they were getting very close to finishing their permit applications, and they hope the remaining partners in Pebble hope to continue with it. The important thing about that is we would see what kind of a mine they would actually develop at Pebble.
But they need a partner who's got the big money, right? Understanding?
Yeah, that's right. Because the Northern Dynasty, the company that's in there now, is essentially an exploration company. They're very good at what they do, but they don't have deep pockets like Anglo had. Heatwald hinted that there's discussions underway with other potential partners. Who knows? Chinese companies.
Yeah, and I've been to these meetings from time to time, and there's always a lot of history there. It's people who've been in, got the gold bug when they were 18 years old, and they're now 80, and they're there to tell their stories, right?
Oh, yeah, and there's some people walking around with big gold nuggets to show off, too. It's really fun.
Well, it's hard to change the geology. It's a lot easier to change the regulations, so that's part of it.
And, of course, the hint might be with showing some of these big nuggets. There's a lot more where this came from. If you'll just help me out a little bit on the financing
just
of the work we're going to do.
Invest in my mind.
It's a sure thing. Okay. Dermot, here's something for you up in Fairbanks. The Air North, the aviation company, wanted to fly once again from Dawson into Fairbanks, but they ran into objection from the Customs and Border officials who said they don't like it. Can you explain this to us?
Well, the plan for next summer is to have Holland America's passengers basically fly between Dawson taking the bus. Up till now, it's been like a 2 full days on the bus going back and forth. So they'd rather do it in a couple of hours flying. The problem is that the customs officials have three officers in Fairbanks, and they're saying they won't be able to handle a daily and with two flights on two. The congressional delegation has gotten involved and is asking the customs people to sort of change things around so that this can be accommodated. The tourism industry in Fairbanks, I know, is really putting a lot of stress on trying to get this decision reversed. But it does seem that here's the issue. You know, there's three employees in that customs office, and can they handle this daily flight along with the other tasks that are assigned to them? This is going to, you know, work its way through the bureaucracy, and it may be a few weeks before we know what the final decision is going
to
be.
Dermot, can you explain this to me? How do they handle Condor, and if there are any other, that's the German aviation that they fly to Europe. How do they handle their customs questions?
Well, they handle that basically the same way that the customs people have suggested handling this flight, which is that instead of flying from Dawson to Fairbanks, they fly from Dawson to Anchorage. Most of the passengers on Condor, in fact, all of them really, from who originate in Fairbanks, go through, they go through customs in Anchorage, not in Fairbanks, because that flight stops in Anchorage and then it comes to Fairbanks. As you can imagine, this doesn't go over very well here.
Well, it costs the passengers some money. They have to buy am I correct about this? They have to buy a ticket from Anchorage to Fairbanks.
Well, it would make as someone here said, it'd make the Dawson to Fairbanks route. It's sort of like going from New York to Washington, D.C. via Cleveland. And so it's really a roundabout way to get here, and it would increase the cost. Part of the problem here is Holland America is already selling these tours for next summer based on flying between Dawson and Fairbanks. Nobody expected this would be a problem.
And with Air North, would they be taking walk-up passengers if you or I wanted to go out there? Is this strictly a contract with Holland American or perhaps other tour firms?
Yeah, I think they have empty seats. They would sell them. But as it is right now, the agency is saying, well, no, we can't do it. Sorry, folks. But I think there's going to be political pressure on them to reverse this decision.
Okay.
They're not still using the DC-3s, are they?
No, they're not. In fact, I'm not sure what they have two different planes they're going to use, so they're not DC-3s.
Okay. I wondered about that. Richard, this is quite the story. The Alaska legislature goes Facebook, but it takes them a while. Years of delay and what you call, and the word you used, excruciating debate, the adjective. Why did the legislature have so much trouble granting lawmakers access to Facebook?
Well, it was excruciating. The debate didn't seem to ever end. I think there's quite a few of the legislators who have as much gray hair as the three of us here do, or the four, probably just don't understand it very much. And there was the classic picture of one of the senators.
Lyman Huffman.
Yeah, was thumbing through a copy of Facebook for Dummies during the meeting. So I think part of it relates to that. One of the legislators was saying, well, it's going to bring politics. It's going to bring inappropriate behavior. It's going to bring sexual predation into the legislature. There's a lot of weird issues that people
well,
who
what are, I wondered when I was were they were, I kept wondering if they were fearful that they'd be accused of getting something for nothing, that they'd be, this would be like a benefit for them that they're not paying for. Has the who paid for it been cleared up? No,
the who paid for it is not so much the issue as our people. I mean, everyone sees it. You know, you have someone at work, you look over their computer, they're you know, posting on Facebook. So I think there's some concern that you're going to have a bunch of aides who are spending all their time posting something off. But they could do that anyway. I mean, they could be shopping at L.L. Bean,
right.
and as it is. So,
or they'd show Senator X sleeping face down on the couch, something like that.
Something
right,
like that, right, exactly. So it was really symbolic. I think it was more a symbolic thing. But eventually they passed it. The legislators themselves can access Facebook, but it was banned for the logins for staff. So staff are still not able to. But the most important thing was that the legislative agencies, like the ombudsman, all the state executive agencies that the ombudsman is in charge of looking over their shoulder, they couldn't access their web pages. So I mean, their Facebook pages, because that's where the Child Protection Agency, all these other agencies, communicate with the public.
And they've got that straightened out.
That was straightened out. Yes.
Okay. Well, that seems like
after years.
Okay.
Years.
And it was at least 4 years. Do I understand?
At least that. Well, that's when it was shut off. Was about 4 years ago. Okay. And
All right. Dermot, Governor Parnell's unwillingness to accept Medicaid money offered as part of the Affordable Care Act draws criticism. Now the governor is under criticism for not refusing to make public a consultant study of what Medicaid money would do here in Alaska. If the governor does not change his mind, how much money is he refusing, and how many people will not join Medicaid?
Well, Mike, that's the big question here, and Rich knows quite about this. He's covered it really well. It's about 40,000 people that might be new people that might be eligible for Medicaid if the governor agrees to the Medicaid expansion. This would be largely paid for by the federal government, with about $1 billion in federal funds over the next 6 years. What dispute how much in state funds this would require? The administration really seems reluctant to want to agree to this expansion. We'll know for sure in December what the administration decides, but it's either next to nothing, relatively speaking, 20 million, or it might be a few hundred million for the state over that 6 year period.
In the consultant's opinion.
Well, for some reason, the governor has refused, which is very strange, that he had refused to release this specific state-funded study on Medicaid costs, what the expansion would cost.
Let's just let Dermot finish up here, and I'll get the other gentleman. Dermot, one thing I didn't understand is, how does the Open Meetings Act apply here? This is a finished report. It's not a working document. Open records.
The administration says it's part of the deliberative process. So, you know, they use that as a sort of a excuse to keep it secret. Frankly, it's not helping them at all, as far as I'm concerned. And there'd be a discussion about this if that got out in the open.
Tim, let's go to you briefly, and then Richard.
Oh, just real quick, the governor's coming under more and more pressure on this. Just today, I think the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce put out a release that they're endorsing the expansion. The state chamber's already done that.
Right.
So he's hearing from his Republican buddies that they want it.
They Richard, as Dermot said, you've done a lot of work on this. Mm-hmm. You want to come in here?
I think that's right. There's the people who are calling for this is a very broad swath of Alaska. It's the NAACP, the Native organization, AFN, the state chamber, the Anchorage chamber now. There is just the health professionals, the hospitals. It seems like an awful lot of pressure. It seems like it's going to be hard.
Parnell's going to say no. He's going to say no to a lot of people who vote.
A lot of people who vote and a lot of people who are part of the Republican establishment.
Yeah, that's true, too.
So I think I'd be surprised if December comes around and Medicaid is not in the budget.
I think that's what's going to happen also.
Okay, Tim, let's stick with you as we close. The Bureau of Land Management has been moving faster to convey federal lands to Alaska Native corporations. Why are these corporations entitled to the land? Give us a little history lesson for those who haven't been here as long as the gray-haired set has. And why has this process taken some years?
Michael, just in a nutshell, the Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971 transferred 45 million acres, which is about a fifth of Alaska, to the Alaska Native corporations. But the problem is the BLM has got to do physical surveys of these lands to do the formal transfer. They developed an interim conveyance mechanism, and the same thing applies to state land selections, where they were able to give all but the final survey conveyance, and you can use the lands, you can sell land, or not sell lands, but you can make deals and develop mines and oil and gas leases and things like that. But the final transfer of ownership, the patent, is taking a long time. It's these surveys that are slowing things up. They have streamlined the surveys quite a bit, so they're able to move faster. They decided they're only going to survey the outer boundaries.
Now, who does the surveys? The government does that, or they have their contractors working for somebody else, or what?
No, the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, does the surveys. They may hire contractors, but they have to fund it, and that's the problem, the amount of money. This, a lot of land and a lot of terrain.
And I suppose they could make the argument that we're suffering from the sequester and
they
uncertainty
are.
In the budget area.
Yeah. But as I mentioned, they're developing faster, using new technology, GPS systems and things like that. So it's going faster than it did. But it's still, I mean, all the lands are mostly conveyed now, but there's still some that are yet to be done.
And are there any lands to be conveyed in what would be considered more or less urban areas?
I think these are mostly rural areas out in the outback.
And is our congressional delegation getting involved in any way? I mean, over the years, they've always said get moving, but through land transfers or congressional acts?
Michael, the most notable one was Senator Murkowski's bill that forced BLM to really speed it up, and that has happened. So that's worked.
The bill became law?
Yeah.
Passed?
Yeah. It required them to required to speed it up, but at least prioritize and put some emphasis to it. And BLM has done that. Of course, the big land conveyance issue that's still pending is the Sea Alaska land transfer bill.
Okay, so we're going to have to leave it right there because we're required to wrap it up and say good night. See you next week.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org. Or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.